There's a difference from when you make it a lifestyle, it's not working out, it is maintaining the one body we've been given.
Welcome back to Astronaut to Zookeeper podcast. I'm the art teacher formerly known as Miss Willis, and I'm on a mission to catch up with former students to see what career paths they've taken and what advice they would give their 14-year-old self, all with the aim to open up the imagination for young people when it comes to life after school. And I'm thrilled to be joined by Mr. Louis Quay. Hello, Louis.
Hello, Miss Willis. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us what you do for a living. What is your profession?
So my profession right now is a personal trainer.
So are you a freelance personal trainer or are you kind of connected to gyms? How does it work?
So firstly, I'd say I'm freelance. I'd compare it to being a contractor. So I provide a service and people can bring me in to provide that service. The reason I say it like that is I've always got my own stuff going on, my own private clients and even private work events and stuff. If someone contacts me and says, oh, can you help run this like HIIT event? We want to do some workouts. Then that's just me. And then I have to invoice and I do it all myself. But there's also studios that I'm affiliated with and brands that okay. I coach for. They give me slots for classes and I teach them.
So you're a busy man.
you have to keep yourself busy, but I like the fact that I'm in control of my work week.
Okay, so with everyone that I interview, I tend to, before we go a little bit deeper into the world of your profession, I always ask the question of, can you remember what you wanted to be when you were 5 years old or when you were a little kid? Can you remember?
Five is too young. I have no idea what I was thinking, what I wanted to be when I was five. But I'd probably say my earliest dream career was really interested in like flying planes or something with like,
okay.
Yeah, I just thought it was quite fascinating. And I know my dad, he's originally from Ghana. So he used to travel every year. He'd go back home around Christmas time to see family. And he was involved in politics. So he used to go and like see the party members. But I always knew he'd go on a plane and go. And I think I was a bit intrigued.
So obviously I knew you when you were a teenager. So did you have an idea of what you wanted to be then? Did you still want to be a pilot?
When I got a bit older and when you get into high school, you're influenced by different things. And a lot, I think sports was there for me. I'm not sure if I thought of it as a profession. So there was no, I'm saying football, but I didn't want to be like a footballer. At high school, I wasn't fixated on anything, but I was involved with the drama. So yeah. I don't know if I thought of it as a career, but I knew it was something I liked to do. And I was always in the plays. Every year, I was in the school play. Well, shout out to Miss Bennett and Mrs. Coop.
So you started to describe a little bit, but can you describe a little bit more what you were like as a teenager? I mean, I remember you being really enthusiastic about lots of things. So you were always keen, like always willing to give things a go and to try things out. That's kind of my memory of you doing art anyway. But so can you describe what you were like at school?
If I think back to school and like even like art classes, when you have like an art class, you know for a fact when you step into that room, you're going to be doing something different and something that is creatively stimulating you. And so I think I got really excited about that. Even like DT, like you was doing something like with your hands, like just something. And I don't think I was ever that type of learner. And I know that now. I'm not someone, if you want to show me something, I have to like do it with you. And yeah. I'll get it spot on, but I just know I can't sit and listen to instructions. I have to get it into my body. It's a very physical way of learning. I know it definitely now, but I think that's what I was doing when I was younger, always willing to try things because I learn when I get things wrong. Like I'd rather do it, get it wrong, do it again, get it wrong, do it again, get it wrong, and do it again. And then I know I've done it right. I don't mind failing at things, which now, because I know that's part of my learning style, I embrace it a bit more.
When you do tell people that you're a personal trainer, is there like a common misconception? Do people think you do something that you don't actually do? What do people think you do?
I think a big misconception actually is that people think personal trainers should be themselves, like, you know, the best physically, like muscly, like models, those kind of things. And I've quickly learned, especially on my course and with my mentors, I had amazing mentors, they like, that isn't the case. Like a good personal trainer should be a coach, and you should be a coach in every aspect. You should be able to coach someone. Say your client is, you know, having a tough week, or, you know, they've just lost a family member, some things like that. You're there for them to coach them how to, you know, take that emotional and adapt it to still progress with the physical. So I think when I tell people, see, I know they're thinking, oh, he just tells people to do like 10 burpees and then 100 sit-ups and then this and stuff. But I do way more than that. I actually coach people in life. I coach them with, you know, how to structure their life. And any question, I always say to my clients, have you got any questions? And I literally mean, do you have any questions about anything? Because there's a difference from when you make it a lifestyle, it's not working out. It is maintaining the one body we've been given.
Are you essentially kind of training the mind as well as the body?
100%. I believe a good coach does that.
So do you find that people, as clients, they come to you and they think it's just going to be all about the body, but then they end up, like you say, you're coaching them through how they're living and breathing in the world and how they're thinking about the world as well?
Yeah, I always ask them, I say, oh, what did you have for breakfast this morning? So I start with a nutrition question. But then once we get into the session, I say, oh, do you have any plans after this session? They may say, oh, I'm going to pick up the kids, or I'm going out for a drink with the girls. Like, I'm literally finding out about your life, because whatever you do on the weekend, when I see you Monday morning, it's going to affect the session. And if I don't have an idea of that, you know, maybe you're a bit of a party goer, or maybe you're quite to yourself, and like you have nights in. But if I have a better understanding as you as a person, then when we come to, you know, pushing your body or pushing you to achieve certain goals, I know exactly what to say and how to say it.
So I'm on my 23rd push-up. It's not going to happen. What would you say to me to encourage me to get to 25? I mean, what's your technique? Are you like drill sergeant yelling or?
No. And the thing is, some people might want that, but I'm not that person. I'm not that person in my day-to-day life. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm a smiley, cheerful, cheeky, charming, like I'm just easygoing. So I'm not going to start shouting at people. They don't take me seriously. So that's not my thing.
Yeah.
But what I would do is like kind of make a joke. And if I know there's something that you want, or there's like, say you done 20 yesterday, I'll say like, Miss Phyllis, you've done 20 yesterday. What, you think you can't do 22 more? Like, it's a cheeky kind of competitive. That's what I'll do.
Okay, good. So using humour. You know, you can call me Alicia. You don't have to call me Miss Phyllis anymore.
Yeah. But has anyone else done that? Just carried on calling you Miss Phyllis?
Oh yeah, everyone does it.
Alicia.
Can you think of a story where you've just thought, I've got the best job in the world, I love this?
Yeah. So it's one of my classes, so like group classes that are on every time. And there's two girls that come and train together. They're like best friends. And they kind of like, one is friendly and the other one's not so friendly. So you kind of like just read it, and you don't, do you know what I mean? You don't want to start going over and being too, and especially someone like me, I'm quite I tried to make a joke as quickly as possible, build that rapport. But when you're getting like not the response you want, you kind of think, oh, okay, maybe I'll leave that person. I'll circle the room again, and then maybe like I'll come back. So after a few weeks, you kind of start finding the people you like, your regulars and people that you know you can, you know, crack a joke with and kind of push a bit more. But this girl wasn't one of those, and I really got on with the friend. And then like a couple of weeks passed, and I think it got up to Christmas, and just like, you never expect anything because you're just training people, but you see, you kind of see each other. I see them and they see me like regularly, like in the week. If you're someone who's coming every Wednesday night, and every Wednesday night, and maybe you're coming twice a week to the club, to the group classes. And I think coming up to Christmas, she basically just brought like a card and some like champagne, and like I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh my day, like this. And it's just that she wasn't a talker like that, or especially when she was working out. And I realized that some people, they're just there, they're working out. It doesn't mean they don't want to have a chat with you. It's just they're just trying to work out.
Yeah.
And it just took me by surprise, and I thought, oh, like I actually am impacting her in her life, and she actually does acknowledge me, and it's actually, there is like a relationship there.
That's cool.
So it was a nice, that was a nice moment.
Okay, what about the flip side then? Have you, can you describe a time where obviously it's not all roses? Can you describe a kind of difficult time in your profession?
Yes, again with the group classes, but it does link into what I just said, so it's actually the complete opposite. So where you don't feel like you're getting anything back, especially if you're trying to like be humorous or say, okay guys, this is the last set. I know you guys are dying, but let's go for like the last 30 seconds. Literally, there was a time when literally the whole room would just had straight faces, and I just thought, I felt so small. And like you would never know because it's like music and lights and like I'm on the mic, so I can't really give anything away. But I literally just thought, these guys are laughing at, like they don't even want to be here. They just, they're hating it. And it was like, you don't have anyone to say, oh, you're enjoying the class, yeah? Like that's the opposite of your job. Like you need this kind of confidence of like the class is good. And it's so hard to have that every single class, because you're going to have some class where you think, oh my days, have I given them like some really bad exercise, wacky exercises, and no one's really interested. But basically, I had a class and no one smiled, like the whole class, and I was trying to make jokes and it was just, it felt like terrible.
I suppose it's like, so every class has a different dynamic, right? Because I guess people are bringing their baggage, bringing their day into your class. And in a way, you're kind of performing. So it must feel like you're on stage a bit, does it?
That's from when the drama at school, I think that was something that was an easy transition. So having that, you know, when people come into class, you've got an intro, and I'm introing off the back of like music, like that's, I get so excited to do that every time. Like, yo, what's up guys? It's your 7:30 PM class. That's performing. Yeah. And I love that part.
Cause you're a DJ as well, aren't you?
Yeah. I brought some decks and taught myself, and I've been doing it for like almost 2 years now, and picked up some work, which was just all off the back of myself. And again, it was like a point, there was a point in probably again 2 years ago where I just started to wake up and just think, I want to do things that I love, and I want to turn it into, I said to myself, I just want to do things that I love. So I just started putting my energy into things that I loved and my passions. And then because of, I'd worked for the part-time jobs, and because I've kind of done work or, you know, industry, and I just said yes to opportunities where I could get paid for what my passion anyway. And I wasn't afraid to asks for payment for something I would be happy to do for free. The fact that I could do it for free doesn't mean I should be doing it for free.
As a freelancer, how does it work? Do you get a salary from gyms, or is it all through your own books, as it were? How does money work?
So I'll give you a timeline of the journey of a PT, and this is like a generic one. Again, you do not have to follow this timeline, and you can insert yourself in whatever area, but it's depending on, you know, skills that you have and how confident you are in what you can deliver as a service. So when you get your qualification, if you pay for it, it is a lot of money. It is an investment. If you are able to get it through like a government funding scheme or anything, that is amazing, good opportunity. So you've done that, you're on your course, you do your course, you get your level two, which means you can be a gym instructor, you can kind of run a gym floor and assist people with equipment and exercises, but you can't actually train people. And you can be paid to like roam the gym floor, but you can't actually like personal train people, like one-to-ones. Okay. Once you get your level three, you can train people. I know I haven't put any money into it yet, but I'm just giving you the journey. Once you get your level three, you can be a personal trainer. What generally happens is that you go to, it could all be changing because of the situation that we're in now with the pandemic and everything, but with gyms, like your pure gyms, their gyms, easy gyms, like those kind of 24-hour access big gyms, you go in, you say, hey, I'm a new PT, I want to kind of just start working for your gym as a personal trainer. The reason people do that is that those gyms give you the space for free, and you teach classes there, and you kind of do few maintenance stuff. They may pay you a salary, most of the time they don't. So it's very tough. Your payment comes in the opportunity to train clients in their space. Once you are in and you're training people, I'd say a starting rate is like 30, 40, 45 pounds like for a session. And that's just in like those gyms. That's what kind of people are expected to pay. But if you move into London, it goes up and it jumps up, and it can be like 60 plus. And some places I've been in, it's like 100, 120, like for just the hour. But again, those are different places with different clientele. So it's like any work. If you're good at what you do, you can charge more. So now you have that. That's like one-to-one PT in spaces, or like you go and rent a gym. Even if there's private gyms, you can pay for like one session and then you train your client. Then there's like group classes. Group classes, unless you're putting them on yourself and just charging people a fiver, like, okay, I want five people, it's a fiver each. Here's the space. We're going to do like a body weight session for 30 minutes. You get 10 people, you've made yourself £50. But where have you done that? If you've done that in a building that charged you to be there, you've got to take some of that £50 away. If you ask someone to pay more than £25 for a class, they're going to be thinking, oh, hang on a minute, I could get a PT session for that. So this is where you start to end up. Some studios will take you on as an instructor. This is what I went in to do first. And you then work for the studio. They pay you a flat rate. So no matter if there's 20 people, you're going to get paid your same rate.
Okay.
Some studios give you a cap. And then if more people over that come, say your class is popular and it's constantly popular, you're going to be thinking, hang on a minute, people like my classes, like I should be getting a bit more. They give you like overheads. So like per person, you get like a bit of, per person, you get like extra £3 or something.
Right. It's like a commission.
It's a commission, yeah. It comes commission based.
We've kind of covered this a little bit and mentioned, so on your Instagram bio, you've got change through movement. So what is your kind of personal approach to health and fitness? I mean, has it changed along the lines? I mean, where does mental health come in? Do you have your own kind of like practice, as it were? What's your personal approach to health?
When I was on my course, the mentors really like drilled it into us that it's not just the physical, it was kind of like you are helping people like with their lives. But what I came to learn and enjoy is that I use fitness as a tool. So it's not the only reason like why we're here together, like in this moment, like say we're in a class together or it's a one-to-one session. We're here in this moment because you've chosen to make a change, like in your life. That's just like the most broadest way of it. You've chosen to do it with me through physical movement and, you know, making yourself challenge your body and kind of keep that heart pumping, keep the blood flowing. And that's a feeling, that's a physical feeling. And then the physical connects with the emotional. You walk away, endorphins are running, you feel a bit better. I really like to refer to fitness as a tool constantly, because people who suffer with like mental health or people who aren't confident or like have social issues, if you can commit, first of all, to like 3 to 4 sessions a week and you do that for like 2 months, not everyone can do that. So it's a level of discipline that not everyone has. And if you can do that, you can then take that into other aspects of your life. So even if you just work out for fun, and you work in a restaurant or like a hotel, and your manager's getting on and on you, and it might give you that sense of confidence to be like, hang on a minute, you don't speak to me nice. I do work hard and I do this, and I know I'm a hard worker because I bloody go 10 out of 10 when I do my classes on the weekend. And I like it when people come and they walk out and they feel like a bit better about themselves.
If you were to go back to school now, like knowing what you know, or the wisdom that you've gathered, what advice would you give your 14-year-old self? So 14-year-old Louis.
I would tell him, please, for the love of God, stop worrying about what other people think. Like, do not second guess things. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to look bad. And if people find something funny, like, just, they, so, 10, 9 times out of 10, people are showing their own insecurities when they react in a certain way. And I think that was one of my biggest things. I really used to care a lot about what other people think, and it stunted me in a lot of ways to grow.
And what changed that? When, at what point were you like, this is holding me back?
I would see someone who wasn't so good at something get good at it, and just because they just didn't care what anyone else thought. Okay. And I'd see people like improve in such a short space of time, or like make such significant growth, because they just like, they just went for it.
So if people are listening to this and they are thinking, they're interested in perhaps becoming a personal trainer or the fitness world, what advice would you give young people now?
My best advice for young people out there now who are interested in learning more about fitness and potentially becoming a personal trainer or fitness coach is, don't think I need to go get that qualification, because you'll pay all this money and you will just kind of, maybe you'll just study and then you'll do it. And I know some people who studied and then they put off the second half of the course and it just dragged out over like years. The reason I'd done my course in within 16 weeks, and I knew for a fact I wouldn't learn just at home on a laptop by myself doing the course. I knew I had to be around a group of people, again, kinesthetic learner. And so my advice would be, find someone within your community or someone you know who's doing what you want to do. and go and say to them, how did you do what you've done? And honestly, you, if they don't mind, ask them to be a mentor, ask them to show you like how they've done it. And if they've got an evening free or something, just say, oh, can we have a chat about this? I feel like young people feel like they need to do it all on their own and by themselves, and we don't support the younger generation enough and give back enough, because I just made the journey. Why can't I take the time to show someone else how to make that journey? Because we get too caught up in this whole rat race of trying to just keep on going. And what people forget is that you learn more when you teach someone as well.
Those are all my questions, Louis. You've survived the interview.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much to the wonderfully positive and cheerful Louis Quay. I love your energy, and it's even got me out running again. So yeah, good influence. If you're listening to this and thinking, yes, health and fitness, that is the future for me, that's a career for me, then head on over to @AstroZookeeper on our Instagram account, where Louis has given us his follow-up 3 pieces of advice. And of course, please do, wherever you're listening to this, it really helps us if you can rate us and give us a thumbs up. It helps other people find us. And finally, of course, thanks to you for listening.